Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to What's Left of America and What's Left of This Show. I'm John Adirola. We're in a big, echoey, possibly haunted building, and we had some tech issues, so I feel not prepared to start the show. But I am prepared for the news of the day. You know who's even more prepared? Who might even have been waiting for this news for literally months? Francesca Fiorentini, how's it going?
Woo! Yes, I am champagne drunk. And I've got bottles lined up, popping them as every Trump official goes down. Kaylee's got it. Kaylee's got
she
it
does.
Today. Kaylee's oh got it. Yeah, no, please. Thoughts and prayers, you know, the same thoughts and prayers for gun control and other things that we know how to fix, but will not.
So obviously I'm doing last minute setup for the show. I'm always excited to have you on the show. Not usually nervous to have you on the show. Little bit nervous today. We'll see if the show lasts until tomorrow or if, you know, we're investigated by the Secret Service or something. But anyway,
I'm on all today. Those lists already, John. Don't worry.
That's probably true. You know what? I'm gonna turn on this light. I think get a little bit of warmth up in here. Okay, so we're gonna be talking about a lot, not all of it directly related to things going into or coming out of lungs. We're gonna be taking stock at how last week's news might have affected the presidential race a little bit later on. We also have some really bad news involving ExxonMobil. But obviously today we're gonna be talking quite a bit about coronavirus, going through a list of who has it. You know, I just wanna mention off the top, because there's a reason we're gonna cover the people who have it that we are going to. But let's also bear in mind that since Donald Trump was diagnosed as having coronavirus, something like 97,000 other Americans have. And they're not the president, so it is different, but still kind of important to 97,000 families, social groups, and all of that. And those people, I'm gonna say very few of them are going to be medevaced to Walter Reed and get experimental treatments and the blood of the young and all of that stuff. So they're sick. They're not as cool from the government's point of view, but they are still sick. So let's bear that in mind.
Yes, you're absolutely. I will talk about this later, but you totally know Trump's been like, "Where's Peter Thiel's blood, boy? Give me the blood, boys. I want them. I don't care if it was a myth. I want the blood of the young." Yeah, he's doing that.
Was it a myth?
I don't think it was.
I thought that was real. I had forgotten it, but as soon as you said it, I just integrated that entirely back into my worldview. It's now core. That's what I believe about the world. Anyway, everybody's here. Thank you so much for joining us. It's gonna be a big show. It's gonna be a very big week. We're gonna have to see what happens, because man, America could go in a couple different directions, and they're probably all bad for us. So let's stay tuned. Hold on to your butts. And if you are in the chat right now, whether on Twitch or YouTube or anywhere, feel free to hit that like button, share the stream, subscribe, and do all of those things. Start pressing buttons and don't stop until your finger gives out. And with that, you ready to do this, Francesca?
So ready.
Okay, let's do it. Donald Trump's recovery from coronavirus has been kind of fraught over the past few days. Like you, I'm assuming, I was watching as his little medical press conferences were going on each day over the weekend, and as they were sending out videos and tweets and all of that, because everybody in America wants to know, what condition is Donald Trump actually in? And it's difficult to know because there's literally no one in the history of America who's lied more to us than Donald Trump. But let's talk a little bit about what's happened since we last covered this last Friday. So the last we had heard, he had been diagnosed with coronavirus. Since then, he was flown by helicopter to Walter Reed. Now he did walk to the helicopter himself, which, you know, that stands out, I guess. And then they began the process of updating us with varying degrees of honesty and forthrightness. We're gonna go through all the steps of that. But Francesca, when the helicopter touched down, that seemed like a pretty big moment so early on in the diagnosis. What did you think of that?
I think that it's serious. That's number one indicator. You know he doesn't want to go to the hospital. He's now saying he wants to leave the hospital. We'll talk about that. But you don't go to Walter Reed, which is only like, you know, it's pretty close by. Conceivably, all of the medical staff could come to you. You're the president, right? They could administer it there. You could rest at home. I'm sure he fought tooth and nail to not go, unless he couldn't, unless he truly was suffering. Then he had to be flown there. So it's serious. You can't take it back. You can't take a hospital stay back, especially when it comes to coronavirus.
Yeah. Yeah, and he seems to wish that he could take it back. We'll go through that. Although I did a live video, on the first press conference on Saturday. So if you're not already, you know, subscribed on YouTube, you're gonna wanna do that so that you get the notice about that. What was most notable about that was it had seemed briefly as if his personal doctor, who like was way more a Trump person than a doctor, that was the impression I got, seemed to indicate that he had been diagnosed with COVID significantly earlier than we initially saw. And that was said at least twice. Now they brought that back afterward. So I can't say exactly what to believe. Perhaps the initial timeline is true. But also one of the most notable things about that first press conference was the doctor repeatedly being asked, was he put on supplemental oxygen? And the doctor kept answering in a way that made clear that he's not on it now, but I am not going to admit whether he was in the past. Eventually it did come out that he was having trouble breathing and received supplemental oxygen on Friday after his oxygen levels dropped. That's one of the things apparently that led to him being transferred to Walter Reed. But when that was revealed, that press conference suddenly looked insane, that the doctor kept pathetically trying to pretend that he hadn't been on oxygen. So he provided an update, Dr. Conley did, and said that of his not disclosing yesterday that he'd recommended oxygen, quote, I didn't want to give any information that might steer the course of illness in the other direction. And in doing so, it came off that we were trying to hide something, which wasn't necessarily true. No, he giggled during one of the follow-ups. He was 100% trying to hide something. But Francesca, apparently he didn't want to reveal information that coronavirus could have learned from or something. To steer the course of the illness?
Don't tell it, we're fighting it. We're gonna surprise attack it in the president's lungs. No one's ever done this before. Like, this is what happens when a celebrity megalomaniac tries to run his own course of medical treatment, which is just, it's the power of positive thinking, the art of the deal, the secret, Rhonda Byrne, she's very smart. Like it's all just like, if you believe you can achieve BS, but like you can't do that with coronavirus. I wish you could, believe you me, there have been many people with lots of crystals and summoning all kinds of planets and tarot cards and whatever. We've all been there, just like, please, take this man from us. Just kidding, don't take him. He should live a long time in prison. But the point is you can't will that with this virus. The best part of this press conference to me was when he said, we wanted to project an upbeat attitude, the attitude that the team has. It's like, excuse me, what? Like you, so again, not again. Let's just lay it on the table. We're not going to get any honest answers from this administration and from these doctors, right? It is, we are in North Korea territory. We are in typical strongman territory, project strength at all times, lie to everybody, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So just try not to follow a rabbit hole or get too happy or too sad too quickly. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the project a positive attitude. That's like Trump's thing with after Woodward saying, you know, I just wanted to like, you know, keep everybody calm. No, but like, we didn't come out for you to be a cheerleader. We've already got a million of those. You're supposed to be the doctor, kind of. But on his comment about, you know, I didn't want to steer the illness in the other direction, like, I wonder if he said that for Trump, because you might remember that over the past 6 months, Trump has described coronavirus as very smart, a brilliant enemy and a genius. Maybe that's for Trump. Like Trump's sitting there thinking, this thing is in me and it's basically Einstein. Don't give it any ideas. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know. I don't know. But that's what we had over the weekend. Not a lot of information, really. A bit more that we're gonna go over. And it leaves us wondering, you know, what's gonna happen as we start this week. I said on Friday that I think Donald Trump is going to be absolutely fine for a couple of different reasons. One, it's that evil has antiviral properties. Two, that he never suffers any consequences, and I doubt that it will, you know, be an exception here. And three, he's receiving literally the best treatment that any human on earth could. Like nobody's gonna get the treatment he is. So he's got a great chance of, you know, doing quite well. And apparently, if you believe them at Walter Reed, it is working. So at the briefing at Walter Reed National Military Medical Center, where the president is being treated, his doctors over the weekend said he's doing very well and had improved so much he could be discharged as soon as Monday. So that's what the doctors say, the extent that you can trust these doctors. On the other hand, we also found out over the weekend that Donald Trump apparently really wants to get out of that hospital. He's apparently demanding to go back to the White House yesterday, two sources said. He's done with the hospital, one of the sources said. Trump is concerned the sight of him being hospitalized makes him look weak, which, you know, obviously he thinks that. That's the most predictable thing in the world. So Francesca, like the doctors are saying he's gonna be just fine so he can be discharged, which could be true. But we also know he doesn't wanna be in there, so.
Everything about his behavior since the diagnosis shows that sadly, he still doesn't take this seriously. He doesn't take his own illness seriously. It's on his doorstep, it's inside of him, inside of his wife. That sounds weird. And all like half of the Trump administration, and he's still not taking this seriously. And the fact that he wants to go home and leave the hospital is a red alert. The White House should not let him back inside. Half of the people in there and all the tours that I assume they're still running are also infected, right? It's in the walls, people. And of course, he thinks it projects that he's weak, et cetera, et cetera, because that's the exact opposite of his fantasy land diagnoses, his medical charts that are like through the roof. Wow, literally strong like ox. My goodness, we've compared the ox DNA to Trump's DNA, and man, Trump's DNA is better. Can I keep talking about DNA? Great DNA, great genes. Like it's so. The thing is I think about Obama, I think about any other president who might just kind of be like, this is serious. I feel like crap. 210,000 Americans are dead, millions have been affected. Maybe I'll just take a moment and be like, wow, this is serious. Everyone take precautions. Look at me, I'm resting. I am, you know, I'm chilling. Hey, I'm watching Fox News, my favorite activity. Do something that shows that you are a human when humans get sick.
Yeah. And I will say that reaction, a lot of what you just said, makes me question some of the initial explanations as to why, you know, why they were announcing it, whether he actually had all of that. Yeah, no, he doesn't want to be seen to be in the hospital or whatever. Hypothetically, it could get him some sympathy or something like that, but he doesn't want that. So I think it's important to bear that in mind. But let's talk a little bit about what they're doing to get him back on his feet. And by the way, he might be released as of today. for either of the two reasons we've talked about, either because he had a mild form of the virus, they gave him every medicine known to man and some unknown to man, and so he's just going to be okay and he's gonna leave, or because he just doesn't want to be at the hospital and he'd love the idea of projecting that he got over it in just a couple of days. For either of those reasons, legitimate or deceptive, he could go home as of today.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
The president's medical team reported that on Saturday, Trump had started another drug to fight COVID-19, dexamethasone. It's a steroid that's been shown in clinical trials to improve outcomes, but is only recommended for patients with severe or critical COVID-19, which we are told he does not have. It's also the third drug to be administered to the president following an experimental monoclonal antibody treatment given Friday and an ongoing 5-day course of the antiviral remdesivir. So the interesting thing about that, dexamethasone is that it is one of the very few things that we actually have reason to believe can improve outcomes, like they said, but not just across the board for literally anyone. It's the only drug apparently to show improvement, but it gives a reduced risk of death versus those who didn't get the drug, but only when they're either intubated or receiving supplemental oxygen. So that might be a little bit confusing. Why would that be the case? That it's helpful if you have a severe case, but not necessarily if you don't, and they wouldn't even give it to you if you don't. Well, the reason for that is, it's a steroid, and the idea is that if you are severely impacted by coronavirus, your body might need that steroid at that point to help you continue to literally breathe. The thing is, if you don't literally need it for that purpose, the steroid is actually going to impact your body's ability to fight off coronavirus itself. So remember, we've been saying this for months now. You have to fight the virus, but you also have to fight the side effects of the virus and the damage that the medicine does to you. So either there's two possible explanations for why he would be on this treatment that he apparently doesn't need. Either they're being dishonest and he has a worse case than they're saying, in which case this would be a legitimate prescription, or he's being a VIP patient and he's saying, "I want literally anything. It's not needed. The doctors might even be warning him against it, but he wants it. And it can actually have some bad side effects, which we're gonna get to in just a minute. But what do you think about this, Francesca? Him being put in this medicine that he arguably doesn't need, according to his own team?
Well, I think your two hypotheses are exactly right. Either we're being lied to about his condition, or he's just like, "Give me everything. What did Barry Bonds take? Inject it into me, you know?" And y'all are the ones who are fans of superhero movies and villain movies and Marvel and DC and whatever else. Mm-hmm. This is how villains are formed, dude. Like, what did Wolverine get injected with? You know what I mean? Except he's a good guy, but you know what I'm saying? There was a
this is sort of Hobgoblin, so Green Goblin style.
This is what the Green Goblin, this is the origin story of the Green Goblin, y'all. Right now, whatever they're, because look, these are all experimental treatments. Now, have they all been experimented together simultaneously? So not only individually are they experimental, but have they all been used at the exact same time? Was there a patient whose life was supposedly worth, you know, more than the 210,000 other people's lives who weren't able to access that medication, for them to actually do that? And was that patient constantly whining about not being given more drugs? Because you know that's what he's doing. And I know you're gonna get into the side effects, and boy oh boy, I think I'm right, man. I think I am right about this new, there's gonna be a whole new universe to talk about what happened to Trump after this. I wanna hear that, Sean.
So here's the thing, yeah, you're right. Let's turn now to the side effects. And as we go through these, I want you to consider these side effects as a result of this medication for two different types of patients. One is a person who is severely impacted by COVID and needs literally anything they can get that will help them to survive the recovery period. The other is someone who could launch a nuclear weapon right now if they want to. So among the particularly worrisome side effects, confusion, delirium, mania, and a higher risk of other infections. The drug can even complicate a patient's recovery. This is what I alluded to earlier, by suppressing the immune system's virus fighting response. But confusion, delirium, and mania.
More?
I don't want in a president.
More.
And it's that, what's that?
More of that? We need more confusion, delirium, and mania. Cool.
That's
cool.
Good. That's not good for someone who, it's not like he hasn't transferred power over to Pence, he's still in charge. So what is the, like, what's the pressure valve? What's the defense mechanism if he decides to do something crazy? Like, I don't know. He's so worried about his fans losing faith in him that he has the Secret Service drive him around in a car, in a contained, no windows rolled down car, when he has coronavirus spewing out of his body. What if something crazy like that was to be done? And it happened. I mean, if you didn't see the news. Anyway.
I love the decision. The decision. First of all, which Secret Service agents would be driving him around, because that's gotta suck. Someone lost that bet hard. And secondly, whether to keep the windows rolled down, because arguably it's minimally safer to keep them rolled down, because he's already far away from the people on, you know, on the sidewalk if he was driving down the middle of the street. You know, but that's bad optics. Obviously, we would have criticized that anyway. But being in just hotboxing someone with COVID, That's really wrong, unless those guys are also, they tested positive.
Or might. So supposedly in that vehicle, the windows don't actually roll down, which sort of makes sense. It is the president, but that would also be a good reason to not do it. Not do it at all. You're already tweeting nonstop and sending out a couple videos every single day. Like, and all the right wingers were like, yeah, I'm really worried about Secret Service getting COVID. Yeah, they're Secret Service, they're badasses or whatever. They're still human. They still have a carbon-based body. Like, it can be infected by viruses. Man, the list of people that we don't have to care if they get sick or die just keeps expanding and expanding and expanding. So anyway, look, like I've been saying, I've said it a million times now, I think he's gonna be just fine. And it's possible that hitting his body with all of these insane medications that he doesn't even probably need could actually get him through this fast, but it also could have other long-term side effects. I mean, the virus itself could have long-term side effects on him in terms of his health. Fatigue and lung damage and all of that, but these could too. And by the way, let's throw one more medication on here. So I mentioned the monoclonal antibodies. So the treatment is supposed to work by neutralizing the coronavirus. That's the idea. The problem is it hasn't yet been fully tested in humans. We only have documented research of it being tested on primates. And I guess this is sort of an edge case here, but this is not like, this is literally an experimental unapproved. The FDA is just like, I don't know, we need time. And you'll notice one other thing.
But they're probably like, look, this size of a hamster brain, that's pretty much on par. Let's do this, you know, like they're not really worried about causing any more damage. It's hard to imagine how you can between the hairspray and the Adderall. I know you're about to say finish that, but I also want to say that we don't know if the president has another pre-existing condition beyond being obese and pretty visually unhealthy, sort of. But you know, whatever. You know, it's pure muscle, obviously. But we don't know. We know that a year ago he was also taken to Walter Reed Hospital, and that the reason for that was never disclosed to the American public. So he might actually have some sort of heart condition, which we know interacts with coronavirus horribly, and that men, older men are specific with heart conditions are more vulnerable to COVID.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Well, we never found out exactly what it was about. The idea was that it was a routine physical, but he did leave it and then tweet, "I didn't have a series of microstrokes." So that's weird. Here's one other weird thing though. So we've gone through all the different things he's on. Steroids that supposedly he doesn't need, primate antibodies, all of this stuff. Did you notice the medication that he's not on? Out of all of that, that long list, no hydroxychloroquine. Ain't that weird? Mm-hmm. Remdesivir and dexamethasone and antibodies, chimp medicine. No hydroxychloroquine. It's so weird. So weird that he doesn't want any of that. But look, again, he's on a lot of stuff. And then those pre-existing conditions, man, the doctor over the weekend was asked a question about comorbidities. And he said, the president is, and he paused, slightly overweight. So the thing is, like, I'm not bringing this up to body shame him or whatever. I'll pass to Francesca and she'll take care of that in a minute. But it's, can we trust the doctor to give us accurate information about the physical condition of the guy that remains in charge with an immense power to do virtually anything? And that doctor stood there and said, he's slightly overweight. I'm slightly overweight at least. Like, nothing against Trump, whatever. He's not slightly overweight. That is just not factually accurate. It's just not. And this guy, it wasn't Kayleigh McEnany. It was his doctor who is saying things not for us to be enlightened, but for Trump watching on TV to feel good about it. Because if he was being honest, it would have hurt Trump's feelings and he would have fired him because that's who Trump is. That's what happened in that interaction. And do you want a doctor who is so obviously scared about losing his job at a moment's notice to be in charge of giving us information and possibly even be in charge of the president's health? They're clearly doing things that he wants done that doctors don't think are necessary. Is that a good idea? I'm not saying from my point of view, I'm not saying from the left's point of view. If you're a Trump fan, is that what you want? Do you want Trump making the medical decisions when he is aggressively uninterested in knowing how science works? Yes. Or do you want the trained doctors?
Yes, that's a really, really important point, right? Like, I'm gonna say that everyone who loves Trump at this point and MAGA folks, they'll just trust Trump. Like, you know, he is smarter than a doctor because he's Q. You know, he's Queefanon. And so therefore, you know, Queef had this whole like backstory where he like had medical training in like Siberia. It was this whole thing. Anyway, point is he's smarter than the doctors and they would trust him. But if you're being honest, if you actually care about this guy, do not listen to a word he says. Put a mask on his face and don't listen to a thing he tells you. He should, and this is the point, right? So far, no one in the Trump administration has been able to tell this reckless president, no matter what the issue is, to stop. That you need to not do this, that this is ill-advised, stop. Some genius sarcastically said, put on a menu of options to kill an Iranian general. Yep. Because they were trying to trick him into doing the less crazy thing. Well, think about that with coronavirus. If it's out there, he wants it. I'm sure every day he's saying hydroxychloroquine. Every day he's saying that. But I guess it doesn't work. And of course, Fox News will never tell their viewers that.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like, here's the weird thing. As a guy who hates Donald Trump as much as I hate anything in this universe, like, I have to hope for his sake that every time he orders the doctor to give him hydroxychloroquine, they give him a small handful of Mike and Ike's and he just eats it and thinks that he's on it. Like, for his own sake, because the last thing we need in the next month is even more chaos.
They're but more chaos is probably coming. Vitamins. It was like when you were like, yeah, I'm sick, mama. I want Flintstones. You just wanted the sugar. You're like, nyeh, nyeh. That's the same thing.
Yeah, probably. we've attempted to explain a little bit about Donald Trump, the drugs he's on, the recovery and all of that. But we're, you know, how much can we actually put into it money wise and production value? Fox has more resources. So when they had Dr. Oz on, here is a little animation they put together to help you understand what's happening to Donald Trump right now.
I think I sent you an animation. If you're able to show it, might be beneficial here. But the virus itself isn't the main culprit oftentimes. The virus, here you are seeing little virus particles. Those little red things are spike proteins. And they're looking for areas. They're going into the president's nose. We don't know what had happened, but a couple days before he tested positive, down through his throat, into his lungs. Those little virus particles set up shop and begin to cause irritation. They attach to the little green receptors, like a key opening a door, they slip right in there, they take over the cell and they hijack the cell to release lots of virus, which you'll see exploding through here. Now here's the problem, that by itself doesn't hurt people as badly as what happens afterwards. Because when the virus is creating lots of areas of attack, the body's immune system, those white cells you see there come in, they attack, and then they start to fill up the lung, especially the alveoli, those purple little sacs, with fluid. And when they fill with fluid, you can't breathe. And if you wait too long, you have lots of damage to the lung.
Okay, so Dr. Oz is sort of a doctor, so he's trying to like educate people. But is that like, does Trump want them playing that animation, Francesca? Like over and over, like his lungs exploding with COVID?
Usually when we see Trump, something's like flying out of his nose that we don't know what it is, and I need more of an explanation about that. Look, hats off to Dr. Oz. I feel like this is the most comprehensive explanation of what coronavirus does to your lungs. That's and true. Your system that they've maybe ever had. They should have been showing this so far in advance. You know, I watch this and I think, I mean, what world are we in that only if the president, who is at this point, again, just a strongman autocrat, like, can we only care about coronavirus unless he has it? And apparently the answer is yes. Fox News will not take this seriously. They won't give you that animation of exactly what it does to your system. Because there are tons of question marks around this virus, absolutely. But the question mark that doesn't exist is how it kills you. We know how it kills you. That's a perfect example, right? Too many white blood cells, it affects your immune system and your lungs fill up with fluid and you can't breathe and you die. So, and like this was stuff we were watching back in March, but I don't think that the Fox News viewers actually saw it. I mean, and if you haven't had an experience with COVID, you also don't know. So I'm just frustrated. But I do love seeing a little piece of COVID go in Trump's nose. I mean, just make me a little happy.
Oh my God, you're crazy. That's the thing. Like Trump, if he watched that and it was on TV, so he does not want over and over his lungs exploding with coronavirus. He wants to appear strong and in charge and alpha. Not enough to actually exercise or anything, but he doesn't want the animation happening. And they chose a photo of Trump. I love that you were repeating that, Brandon. They chose a photo where Trump's like, as the coronavirus goes into him, that's weird. Why are you having him smile as it's going into him? That's like the person who made that animation, I'm not committed, is a Trump fan. I'm not sure that it's a Trump fan. But anyway, yeah, you're right. If it educates some people as to how the virus works, that's a good thing. I will dispute that this represents they're taking it seriously now, because I've been watching the takes on the right. And they may have been finessing their talk about COVID, but I don't think they take it seriously. I mean, I'm not gonna be able to remember their names. There's like three other Ben Shapiros that you always see in right-wing media.
Sure,
I was gonna say it's the one that's like oddly obsessed with the trans community, but then I realized that's all of them.
All of them.
That's all of them. Said there's no point wearing masks because we're all gonna get coronavirus. I saw that video today. So it's not even the president can get it. Shouldn't we all take it seriously? It's he got it. There's no point doing anything. The surrender, the willingness to just preemptively surrender is just so pathetic. I wish that this had the silver lining, that it led to Trump fans taking it more seriously, wearing masks, socially distancing and all of that. But I don't think that at least 1 week in, we've seen good evidence of that.
I mean, this is the base that they created. This is the viewership that they've created. And now they're turning on them when Steve Ducey or Doug Ducey or whatever, Ducey, I just remember Ducey, Steve, right?
Steve.
When he,
it's Steve.
Thanks. When he puts a photo of himself out wearing a mask, he gets completely clobbered by the right in the comments. And it's like, yeah, man, because this is what you did. This is what thou hath wrought in your viewership. The disbelief, the hoax, the denialism. This last week was also the week where we learned that Trump is the greatest spreader of misinformation around COVID.
Yeah.
And now he's got it. And yes, they're gonna spin it. But it for a moment there, I was like, maybe they'll take it seriously. Maybe there'll be a reckoning. But you know, it'll be just like China put it in my coffee, you know, or whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm gonna wait until a little bit later on. While Donald Trump was at Walter Reed over the weekend, he apparently, according to multiple sources, got furious at Mark Meadows for sort of off the record contradicting the doctor and saying that Trump's condition wasn't as good as the doctor had said. He apparently was getting very bored at Walter Reed, didn't like the idea that being there sent the signal that he was weak. And so over the weekend, they did many things to try to reassure his fans that he's just fine, including taking his ride around in a car and possibly infecting his Secret Service with coronavirus, sending out videos of which we're gonna play you a bit. But also making sure that you know he's working, that he is hard at work. So they released photos like this. And there you see the president with a flag. I don't know if he groped this one, but he's got some papers and he's doing some stuff. And then they've got this next photo, and you've got him there, shirt off, still working in a different room, lots of papers and things like that. The issue with at least that first photo, though, is that when you zoom in, as Andrew Feinberg did, it does appear to be a blank piece of paper that he's sharpening his name on, which undercuts the work thing just a little bit, just a bit.
Here I am, tampering with ballots in real time. I'm tampering with ballots here, tampering with ballots there. I'm just making the nameplates for the gulags. When I get reelected slash take control, Bill Barr and the Supreme Court hand me the presidency again forever. These are your little name tags. Guys, masculinity is a prison, and Trump is in a prison right now. I feel bad, not for him getting COVID. I feel bad that he feels like he has to project some kind of competence, strength in this moment. Like,
yeah,
take a load off, bruh. Like, you do it every weekend when you go golfing, when you say it is what it is, right? That 200,000 people have died, Americans have died, you don't care about that. Just take a load off. No one's expecting you to do anything right now. The left knows you're not doing anything. The right is like, you need to rest. So why? And also, if you're trying to pretend to be president, why are you still so bad at this?
Yeah, how could you, like, Trump, even before the presidency and all of that, he ran a company for decades and decades. And he doesn't know how to even pretend to look busy. How do you not know that? How do you not pick that up over the years? I can do it. I've done it. I used to be in class and I'd have my book in class and I'd have Harry Potter inside of it, but it looked like I was reading a physics book. I picked that up and I was a college student. You're like five times as old and you don't know how to do it. You just can't make it happen. And so he puts out and I agree with you about the masculinity, and man, I pity any right winger that like has the inclination to try to look strong, because they have no clue how to do it. There was that Matt Walsh guy, he's one of the other three Ben Shapiros or whatever. And he had this long tweet about how guys are using emojis and my dad would have never imagined. What is wrong with you? Jesus, who hurt you? Everybody, I have to assume, everybody hurt you, you clown. And I sent him a clown emoji, I'm sure he loved it. Anyway. So he's signing blank pieces of paper, but here's the thing. It's not just fake because he was only signing his name. So we showed you two pictures. We showed you a picture in front of a flag where he's wearing a blue jacket, and we showed you a picture in a different room at a big dining table where he's wearing just the white shirt. Here's the issue with those. If you don't know a lot about photography, you think we snappy. You take off your jacket, we run to the next room, we snappy. They don't know, they think you've been working all week. Here's the thing. Cameras actually embed information about when photos are taken. And if you don't do sufficient processing and all that stuff, people can look at the photo and they know when it was taken. Those two photos were taken 10 minutes apart. So what was he antsy? And so he moved from one table to the other? Or is it a little bit more likely that it was staged? That they had him sit at a couple of different places really fast, scribble his name to fool his followers into thinking that he's working? And how weird is that? How bizarre. Just actually work, or actually relax. I'm fine with either of those two things. You chose the dumbest possible option. Give him a Sudoku. Give him a coloring book. Whatever.
Honestly, look. Again, it's sad because it really takes a village to prop up the idea that Trump is a competent president. It does. And that village is Fox News, it's AM radio, it's all of the places that are difficult to break through to because the people who listen to them have sworn off of any so-called fake news, i.e. actual journalists doing actual reporting, or people who are, you know, looking at the metadata of a photo that was released. And again, the people who released it were not smart enough to erase that metadata to see that they're only taking 10 minutes apart, or that they don't zoom in. And it's not that like Fox or Rush Limbaugh or any of the other nut jobs, even on YouTube, right, don't know that he is lying. It's that they're okay with it. And yeah. I think that's the part that's difficult for me as we sort of move into, we're 29 days away from the election. We're all thinking about how we might actually bring some of the people we know in our lives back from the brink. And we know that they're not watching even CNN or MSNBC, right? Or, you know, they're not even reading, I don't know, AP or Reuters. Reuters is fairly conservative. They're not even really reading the Wall Street Journal. I mean, all of these,
yeah.
Like obviously they're not free and on Facebook. So like, why would we read them? And so you think, man, if we could just cut through this, but no one will. It's just that photo wasn't for us, John. That photo was for the followers, true. Like you're saying, just to say, look, isn't our amazing president amazing once again? Everything's fine and amazing.
Trump released multiple videos during his stay at Walter Reed, and he's of course still there. But by the time we're done with this video, he might have gone home. We don't know. We're not going to show you all the videos because it's Trump. But we are going to show you a little bit, and it's important because it reveals a bit about how they're going to talk about Trump getting coronavirus once he's recovered and he's back out on the campaign trail. So take a look at a little bit from one of his weekend videos.
But I had no choice because I just didn't want to stay in the White House. I was given that alternative. Stay in the White House, lock yourself in, don't ever leave, don't even go to the Oval Office, just stay upstairs and enjoy it. Don't see people, don't talk to people, and just be done with it. And I can't do that. I had to be out front, and this is America, this is the United States, this is the greatest country in the world, this is the most powerful country in the world. I can't be locked up in a room upstairs and totally safe and just say, hey, whatever happens, happens. I can't do that. We have to confront problems. As a leader, you have to confront problems. There's never been a great leader that would have done that.
What the hell are you talking about? Francesca, what the hell is he talking about? What does any of that have to do with anything that is actually happening right now, or any of the thought process that led to him going to Walter Reed? What was that?
What it was what anthropologists will study years from now when they ask, how did the American empire fall? They will watch that video and see this is American exceptionalism at its worst. All right, we are eating ourselves alive. This is, we must project strength even though we lead the world in COVID cases and deaths. Maybe we're being outpaced by a country with far fewer resources than we have, but we've been leading in this. And coronavirus has struck the world at how inept this country that claims to be so strong has been utterly failing its people. And wow, man, now you want to talk about confronting your problems? You've been running away from this for months. You've been trying to bury this story over and over and over again, and now you're infected, all right? So sit in it and deal with it and do something about it. Because guess what? We still don't have a plan. Mm-hmm. We don't have national testing. Nurses are still making their PPE. Teachers don't know what the hell is going on, and now they're being subjected to in-person classrooms because you and your loyalist governors have sent everyone back to school to die. Okay?
Yeah.
So how dare you talk about being a leader? How dare you talk about confronting our problems? Now, you are our problem.
100%. Yeah. No, we don't have a plan. We're not doing anything. Like, it's one thing. It's like, hey, I guess it's Tired and Wired. Tired, the US has no contact tracing plan. Wired, they don't even contact trace when the White House starts spreading coronavirus. Like, literally for there, some of the reporters who've gotten sick, the White House isn't even talking to them. They're literally unconcerned about who might have gotten it. And so here's
John,
the thing
about they didn't have a mask policy. They just instituted a mask policy. Now
it's been 7 months. 7 months. 200,000 dead. Even Trump getting the virus didn't initially cause them to wear masks. It's like, well, maybe if like 50 people that work with me get sick, maybe then I'll wear a mask a little bit begrudgingly. But really fast. Okay, so on his commentary about the leadership, here's the thing. We've acknowledged, Francesca was very right to acknowledge, we're not the targets for this video. Okay, fine. But let's be really clear about what he's saying there. I was given the option of staying in the White House, but I can't do that. I have to face this thing. It's an office. It's a 6-room suite. It's literally the exact same thing. You're sick. If you want to go to the hospital for care, do that. But stop pretending that that makes you king of the Thunderdome or something. It's just a natural human thing. When you get sick, you go to the hospital. It doesn't make you The Rock. Like, it has nothing to do with any of that. But this is what they're doing now, okay? They're saying that this somehow makes him more of a leader. I'm gonna spoil one of the graphics that was supposed to be later. They're literally attacking Joe Biden, not only for wearing masks, they're literally still doing that. And I know I'm pissing off everyone in the audience who doesn't like when I use the word literally, but it's accurate here. But also, they are saying that Biden doesn't have firsthand experience with having COVID, so that makes Trump a better leader for the pandemic because he stupidly bungled. I'm not even kidding. Go Google it. Because he bungled into getting it himself, that makes him the guy you want to fight the pandemic. Stupid, inexperienced Biden, all he did was avoid getting a fatal illness. What a dummy. Why are you gonna trust him? They're saying that. That's one of Trump's staffers was on, I think it was MSNBC, it might have been CNN. I have a very hard time telling them apart, saying that in the last 24 hours. So coming out of this, they're not going to be taking it more seriously. They're going to be milking his water-filled lungs for everything they can get out of this.
No, and this is where the lack of an opposition party is killing us. Because look, a week ago, Democrats were not on the ropes, but it's been. We'll talk about polling, but it hasn't been. You know. It hasn't been comforting, right? We're still, everything's still up in the air with the election, especially since we know that Trump is actively trying to undermine it. Louis DeJoy slow walking all the mail-in ballots, et cetera, et cetera. Now the guy who's been saying that COVID is a hoax has COVID, right? And Democrats, what do? They gotta pause, they gotta wait, they gotta be respectful. And maybe that's the right move. But then you hit them hard. You go in. They are straight up weaponizing the fact that you don't have COVID as a reason that you failed. And yet Democrats, and Pelosi said a couple things. There have been a couple lines here and there, right? You know, Kamala said some things, Biden said some things. But I want I want someone to eviscerate this administration. Because at this point, if you are that privileged and you have that much access to information and it has been this long in this pandemic and you still get sick, that is on you. I'm sorry, that is on you. Yeah. I'm not talking about essential workers. I'm not talking about people who, you know, who are doing their best they can and don't have those resources to stay home or the privilege to. This is the White House. This is the epitome. This is the manifestation of their failure is the fact that they're all sick now. So yeah. If we're not weaponizing against that against them, I don't know. We're gonna squander this, you know, lead anytime now.
Yeah, and I can't imagine higher stakes for this because, like, I don't know to what extent the fact that the election hasn't happened yet is affecting their messaging around COVID. I have to assume it's making them be slightly more responsible than they would otherwise be. If they get through the election and Trump has won, Like, I don't know. Are we gonna have trucks driving around neighborhoods literally spraying COVID in people's faces? I don't know. But like, this is them when they're worried about losing their jobs, people. Breaking news. Everybody's got COVID, and we've got one new name to add to the list. Kayleigh McEnany apparently has coronavirus. She tweeted this after testing negative consistently, including every day since Thursday. I tested positive for COVID-19 on Monday morning while experiencing no symptoms. No reporters, producers, or members of the press are listed as close contacts by the White House medical unit. Moreover, I definitively had no knowledge of Hope Hicks' diagnosis prior to holding a White House press conference or press briefing on Thursday. We're gonna return to that. As an essential worker, I have worked diligently to provide needed information to the American people at this time. Okay, hold on. So first of all, and she's gonna quarantine. So first of all, you've never tried to do that. You weren't hired to do that. And there's a lot of essential workers in America, and people like you haven't cared whether they live or die for more than 6 months now. I got news for you, you ain't essential. You ain't essential for literally anything. It's a farce. It's really a mockery of democracy, which is interesting. It's intriguing maybe, but it's not essential.
So, is she gonna use this? Yeah, I mean, that all just reeks of like, how can more Trump officials steal bailout money from the American people? Kayleigh's calling herself essential. Is Mnuchin gonna cut her a check? Like, is that what happens? Because that's pretty much what happened in the last bailout.
I don't know.
Yeah, Kayleigh's got it.
Oh my God.
Kayleigh's got corona. She coughed all over the podium. All right. Here's the thing, I want to see Kayleigh on a Zoom call lying for the president from bed, just like the Kung flu. it's made up. Like the president, I don't know what she sounds like. I can't do it. Okay, let's do this. It's Kayleigh, but she's got a little cold. The president absolutely condemns white the proud.
Jesus, you're crazy. Okay, so look, I don't wish COVID on my second worst enemy. And she's not even that. So but I will say she kept doing the maskless things, and she says there that I totally didn't know, I didn't have it, I didn't expose a bunch of people. We'll see. How much can we trust her? I mean, have you been paying attention the past few months? And I will also say this, this is a video I was gonna play before I even knew this breaking news. Here she is being asked about Donald Trump's diagnosis, the timeline for that. And I want you to see how evasive and slippery she was able to be.
Hey there.
Hey guys, how are you?
Hello,
how are you?
What's up, Mark?
Alyssa mentioned that the West Wing is planning to put out the number of staffers affected with COVID. She said you guys have the number. Do you know what the number is, Mackenzie?
No, there are privacy concerns. We take very seriously safeguarding the information of the personnel here in the White House. So that's basically where we stand right now. Yeah, I'm not going to give you a detailed readout with timestamps of every time the president's tested. He's tested regularly, and the first positive test he received was after his return from Bedminster.
Was he tested between Wednesday night and the time he went to New Jersey?
Again, not giving a detailed readout of his testing, but safe to say his first positive test was upon return, or at least after Bedminster that trip. Thank you guys very much.
Okay, so again, if he didn't do anything wrong and you're not hiding anything, why are you doing everything you can to make us wonder if you're hiding something? Because that was so evasive and the disingenuous. I'm not gonna give you like a detailed readout with timestamps. No, we're not asking for documentation. I don't want a spreadsheet. I'm not even interested in Excel. I asked if he was tested before the debate and you don't wanna answer that. You're saying you didn't do anything wrong, but you really don't wanna go on record about it. Why? Why be so evasive if he didn't do anything wrong? Why be so condescending towards that reporter that you might have been infecting with coronavirus right as we're watching that video? Francesca, I just can't take, again, don't wish it on anybody except my actual worst enemy. But the dishonesty, the lies, the never ending lies, man.
I don't know why she stops. I mean, there's part of me that's like, okay, we're not far that far down authoritarianism for her to not have to talk to the press and to ban the press, although they've been banned before from the White House. But why even stop? If you're just going to evade and kind of throw shade and be disrespectful about that and just kind of snippy, like, what, just keep your COVID to yourself, hon, and you know, keep your mask on, keep walking. You have nothing to say. The only thing I can come to is like she feels important. Like, oh yeah, now I can answer. Now I can give a non-answer. Yay. Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
It matters. I just want to say it matters when he tested positive. It absolutely matters, and it matters that. I mean, this is the thing with these debates. It's like you assume. I mean, I feel like the NBA is taking more precautions than they are, right? Why can't we lock them all in a Disneyland complex? And you know, I don't know. Do what they're doing. But like, really though, why was there a debate if they couldn't guarantee testing and a negative test before you are actually set to debate? And I will say one other thing is that apparently the White House and all the Trump administration has been misusing the Abbott test, which is like the rapid test for, which actually has like a 1 in 3 failure rate, a false negative rate. And they've been using it nonstop. Now, obviously I don't imagine they're doing it that much, but at least around the Rose Garden stuff and the announcement that couldn't wait of Amy Coney Barrett being their Supreme Court justice nominee to overturn ACA and Roe v. Wade, right? That that couldn't wait. And they've been misusing them. And so again, this is what happens when you don't believe in science and or you're too stupid enough to follow it.
Yeah, 100%. Now, I'm gonna go through a list of the people so far that have been infected, other than Donald Trump and Kayleigh McEnany, which we've talked about. Bear in mind, we don't know exactly where they were infected, when they got it, but we did have this. Take a look at this picture. This was the nomination ceremony for Amy Coney Barrett. Just huge quantities of people without masks, in close quarters, hugging each other and all of that. We're not gonna go through all the photos, but they're giving each other hugs and all of that. And many people have been putting together lists of those photos with the circles around the people that have since been infected to get an idea of who they might have been spreading it to. So let's talk about who's gotten it. Obviously, you have Trump and Melania. You have Hope Hicks. That was sort of the start of this. You have US Senator Mike Lee, Republican. US Senator Tom Tillis, Republican. Since we made this graphic, US Senator Ron Johnson, Republican, also has it. You have Kellyanne Conway, in addition to Kayleigh McEnany. Bill Stepien, Trump's campaign manager. Chris Christie, who over the weekend checked into a hospital, and I haven't heard anything about that in like more than a day. And obviously, he has comorbidity, so that's a little bit dark there too. Nicholas Luna, assistant to the President Trump. John Jenkins, president of the University of Notre Dame. Three journalists from the White House press corps who are not gonna receive the care that Donald Trump did because they were stupid enough to just be doing their job when they were infected by these irresponsible people. A White House press staffer, according to the Correspondents Association. And you also have Chad Gilmartin, another White House press staffer, who apparently was not traveling with Donald Trump or part of the debate prep. So apparently might have gotten it either afterward or in some other venue where they are spreading coronavirus. But that is a long list. It is growing multiple times every day at this point.
Yeah, who was the Gwyneth Paltrow in all this, right? Like who was the, you know, patient zero of the contagion within the Trump administration? I'm curious. I don't know if it was Hope Hicks, but given the amount of campaigning they've been doing, which BT dubs, they're now sending Mike Pence out on the campaign trail, which is just hilarious to me. But they're like, cool, we'll just, you know, second in command, the person who's got to take over the country. If something happens to the president, yeah, send him out. We just play with fire once again. But to me, and again, it's the cruelty, the irony of the fact that they are confirming a justice and congratulating one another for their confirmation of a Supreme Court justice a month before a presidential election, who is the complete opposite of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And again, who will overturn the ACA, kick millions of Americans off of their healthcare plans and gut Roe v. Wade and or maybe overturn it, affecting millions of women and all people across the country. Like, that's just, let's just not, that cannot be lost on us.
Yeah.
How ironic and awful that is. And then this is the moment, because they couldn't wait. They could not wait to have this confirmation or this nomination ceremony. And it's also a testament to how contagious coronavirus is. This is outside. Not every one of those senators who was infected was maskless. Some people were wearing masks, right? Those White House correspondents, I'm sure, were wearing masks. And I don't think they were chumming it up with Kellyanne or Bill Barr, right? Like, this is contagious. It hangs in the air, and you should absolutely, everyone should be wearing masks and social distancing from one another. Now, we know, we've seen that, like, for example, the Black Lives Matter protests have surprisingly had a low or if not insignificant number of COVID cases coming from that. None that we can, no super spreader event that anyone has been able to trace. So you gotta wonder, it was the masklessness and the lack of distance.
100%, yeah. Yeah, and just, you know, how much, like, and the thing is, a mask is a precaution. It makes you safer than otherwise coming or going, but it's not perfect. But also, we know, and we've repeated this over and over again, the severity of your COVID infection is going to be driven by a lot of things. One of those is how much of it you got. Yeah. So if you have a mask on, you might get it, but you might have a low accumulation of coronavirus in your system, an easier recovery. If you're maskless and you get it, you might have gotten a lot more, especially if you were in very close quarters with someone. All of this matters. Now, I know for a lot of right wingers, the fact that some people have still gotten it is a reason to just throw your hands up and surrender because they quit in the face of literally any challenge. I personally think it should mean that we should be a little bit more vigilant, if anything. But it is spreading. And you mentioned Amy Coney Barrett. Hypothetically, three Republican senators now have COVID and should be quarantining. So I'm not saying that Mitch McConnell isn't gonna find some way to remotely push this through, breaking all of the rules and everything like that. But they're rushing this through when they can't even safeguard their own senators at this point. Anyway, and God only knows, I mean, who else? What, like, we're seeing this list. This is the most all-encompassing list I've been able to find. What about the people who worked that event? What about the White House staffers? What about the catering people? What about the people who set up the venue? What about the camera people and all of that? They're probably getting sick, but they're working class, so we don't even get to hear about them. They're certainly not gonna be medevaced to Walter Reed. Like, the staffs of these Republican senators, because if they're going to these events masks, I doubt they're being really like diligent about it when they go back to their office. How many people have they spread this to over the past few weeks? And we may never know. We may never know. A lot has happened in the past week and a half. The tax thing was like 8 days ago, remember that? And then we had the debate, the worst debate in American history. And then everybody got coronavirus all in 1 week. It's not an October surprise, it's Octoberpocalypse at this point. So what effect is this going to have on the election? And we don't know for sure yet, but polls are starting to come in. And according to one being reported from the Wall Street Journal, Joe Biden now leads the president 53-39 among registered voters in this poll. It was conducted 2 days after the debate. So this does not incorporate Trump getting COVID, but it does get the tax story and the debate and all of that. Now, that's registered voters, not likely voters, which I don't prefer, but you can compare it against the same poll earlier on. And earlier on, last month, he had an 8-point lead. That has jumped to a 14-point lead. It even exceeds the biggest lead he's ever had in this poll back in July when he was up by 11 points. So it appears that this was a pretty big swing in just 1 month, at least on that poll. So Francesca, I think we can probably just sit this out and just relax now.
Yeah, it's in the bag.
Probably.
Vote green, JK, please don't. please
don't
please,
start please, anything.
Please, if don't you're in a swing anything. State, please don't vote green if you're in a swing state. Okay, I'm done. I'm not starting anything. Oh my God, this is not just the most important election of our lifetime. Look, I think the president needs to heal, and I think he needs to stop fake projecting strength. But it is unquestionable that this came at a terrible, terrible time. A month out before the election, it is not looking good. Now, again, that doesn't mean he's not going to try and steal it. Doesn't mean he's going to claim victory the night of if it seems like he's ahead in in-person ballots and in-person polling. But it of course there's going to be a dip. I can only imagine how, not just after the debate where he proved he was completely unpresidential, unable to shut up, unable to stay on topic, unable to show Biden some amount of respect, that then on top of that, clearly the crisis he's mishandled has come home to roost. And so, yeah, I wonder what the numbers are going to be like later this week or even next week. And of course, we can't get comfortable. Yeah. But yeah, it's this. You know, after the debate, it was interesting because it was like, I don't know, do people like that? Well, not enough. Not enough people like constant interrupting and disrespect and bringing up a son's drug addiction. Like,
yeah,
not enough.
No. And I got news for you. Like the people who are like, they're just hot for like you to mock the drug addiction of a son or whatever. They already like Trump and they're already voting for Trump at this point. So let me give you a little bit more information. So this is from that poll. Women favor Biden by 27 points. He was already up in that group 20 points last month. It might be that debate, maybe, but it's not just women. Men 50 years and older moved from a 13-point advantage for Trump in a pre-debate NBC News Wall Street Journal poll to a 1-point advantage for Biden in the latest poll. So older men, so women who outnumber men are gonna be more for Biden. Now you have the older men, that's like Trump's bread and butter right there. Literally people who just eat bread and butter, that's all they do. They're now going for Biden as well. By the way, so this is all not about the COVID. We don't have a lot of polls for that yet. They're coming, we'll talk about them when we get that. But the poll found that 65%, including 9 in 10 registered Democrats and 5 in 10 registered Republicans agree that, quote, if President Trump had taken, this is a different poll, had taken coronavirus more seriously, he probably would not have been infected. So even half of registered Republicans are like, yeah, he probably could have dodged that one a little bit. And almost every single Democrat. Now, will that translate to votes for Biden? I don't know. Seems reasonable. So as polls start to come out over the next few days, it might incorporate all that we've seen over the past 3 days since his diagnosis.
He's losing seniors in Florida, John. Like, you don't want to talk about bread and butter. That's like, that's the flour that they use to make the bread and the cow to make the butter of Trump's base. Seniors in Florida. And this is, again, it could have been the heroic saving grace of this presidency. Ooh, a crisis, we actually confront the crisis, we take it seriously, it's affecting the elderly, let's not forget them, champion them. Oh, I was just impeached, no big deal. Like, not even gonna focus on that. All he had to do was try. And again, I think the media would have rolled out the red carpet for him. As long as we weren't number one in deaths and number one in cases, the media would have been like, look, the man is trying. If he had shown minimal empathy, he would have gotten a W on this one, and he hasn't. And yeah, he's burrowed himself in his own lies further and further and further. And yeah, older people who aren't leaving the house. I mean, look, in Florida, like, you think you would go, would you go outside if you were over the age of 65? No.
No.
There's
no, I don't think they do normally.
Break. They don't do normally anyway, but like, I would never go out if I were over 65. Just because I don't want to die and yeah, I'm too scared to. And the only time you might go out is to vote. So at least it might actually just keep people home. Or these are dependent voters. They sort of vote every single year, every single election. Or they might just, you know, flip and cast a vote for Biden.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Now I want to close out the polls with one additional thing. We don't touch base with this all that often, both because we have sort of a fraught relationship with this organization and its figurehead. But also, if you're a Trump fan, then you're going to want to bookmark this moment to throw in our face afterward, because the polling is not looking good for Donald Trump. It's still weeks away, and God only knows what can happen. This week is a reminder of that. But as of right now, in the 538 forecast, Biden wins in 81 out of 100 simulations of the election. So every time they run the numbers, he wins. Not just the popular vote, but the Electoral College as well. And if you look, you know, at like the sort of break point on when he gets enough Electoral College votes, there's a couple states of buffer. So Trump really does need Something big to break in his direction if he wants to legitimately win this thing. But everyone needs to remember the laws of the 2020 election that we have been laying out. One, that it's not election day, it's at least election week. And two, that Trump is not trying to win this thing on the numbers. He is trying to sow doubt and discord so that he can nullify the mail-in ballots afterward. And it doesn't matter if Biden gets, you know, a ton of votes if the votes don't count. So you still got to go out there and vote. Doesn't matter what the simulations show. And you have to be ready for a battle, potentially a legal, potentially Supreme Court battle after Election Day.
Election month.
Possibly election month. That's what John Oliver was calling it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And everyone should watch that episode of John Oliver. It was a very good thing about the election. You thought we were going to get through a day without mentioning him.
No, got to mention him. That's okay.
We're good.
Yeah.
Anyway. Very excited to welcome back to the Damage Report, professor and director of the Center for Medicine, Health and Society at Vanderbilt University, as well as the author of Dying of Whiteness, Jonathan Metzl. Welcome back to the Damage Report.
Thanks so much. Great to be back.
It's great to have you here, and you're very well suited to talk about the spate of breaking news that we've had over the past week or so. So you teach a course at Vanderbilt about COVID and society. Now, that obviously touches on a lot of different things. But now when you have not only the president and the first lady, but so many people in the White House becoming infected with coronavirus in a short period of time. Tell me a little bit about this, about how you react to the news and how you think America will react to this huge turn of events right before an election.
Well, it's momentous. I mean, you know, I'm glad you mentioned our class. We're teaching a class, a couple of colleagues and mine and myself, called COVID and Society. And we're trying to address, like, how is this pandemic going to change the world as we know it? And the main narrative of the course is the virus sets the narrative. Really, the virus is something that we really can't control. What we can do is we can try to prevent it, but then we react and we adapt. And societies that are the most versatile, and governments that are the most versatile, that plan for the future the best, those are the ones that are going to come out ahead of it. Whereas governments that try to act like they're the ones dominating the narrative and virus be damned, those are the ones that are gonna get screwed. And so we've been playing this out all semester, looking at human versatility, looking at other governments and the way that they plan they change their infrastructure, they address inequities, they plan for nationalizing health insurance. And every single time that we look at a good example of really great innovations that come out of pandemics, we say, oh, but in the United States, we're not really exactly doing that quite yet. I mean, individuals are innovating, businesses are innovating, but our government has not thought about the future. And really, that's coming home to roost right now, that in a way, the minute this thing becomes uncontrollable, you see that it's just hard. No matter what your spin is, when you're having rampant infection that you have no immunity for. And so in a way, I just think that really the virus is controlling the narrative right now, and how that plays out in terms of how people, I mean, I know Trump is going to try to make this be like a rise from the dead kind of thing, but how this spins is, you know, spin is great, but ultimately when you have rampant infection like this, you better just try to keep everybody safe. I mean, I think that's really the biggest thing.
So I'm curious for your view on two different ways that things could change potentially. So you point out that, you know, we haven't been as a government particularly dynamic in our approach to it. We've done far worse than a lot of other countries. And we also know that not everybody takes the virus as seriously. For all of us, it's probably changed over time, but Trump supporters largely seem to be less concerned about doing much about this. Do you think that Trump getting it and so many other people, the first lady and everyone, could that change either part of that? Either how his followers view the virus or the approach that our government actually takes to dealing with it? Is this the thing that could change either of those?
Well, let's hope that's the case. But I mean, look at what's happened. You know, Trump said, I'm gonna change my evil ways. And then 5 minutes later, he's taking the joyride around town, infecting Secret Service agents. And so I do think, like many other moments, this is a moment where we should wake up. I really hope that the Trump administration starts paying more attention to science, foregrounding real scientists. Hopefully, this is the moment. We've had, you know, 210,000 people die, and so we've had a million of those moments. But I certainly hope that this is the case. Now, that being said, the way that the Trump administration is spinning this narrative as kind of a individual sacrifice, and then a kind of, you know, he hath arisen kind of story, and you know, it reminds me of a lot of stuff I've seen in my research about people rejecting their own healthcare, people, not just getting guns, but like having 50 guns in their basement, you know, things that were really negatively impacting their health. And so I would say that there's a mistake if people think, oh, because Trump has this, people are all of a sudden going to wake up and start becoming Democrats or supporting public health. I think there's a very real chance that in a way, the ideologies that resisted wearing masks are just going to become more hardened, that people will become even more ideological. And in some ironic way, this could actually make things worse.
Interesting. So another interesting thing is that when we plan to have you on, we want to talk about the Supreme Court, the effect that Amy Coney Barrett as justice on the Supreme Court could have on things like the future of the ACA. Interestingly, in terms of public health, the fact that so many Republican senators, at least three now, have become infected by coronavirus could potentially impact at least the speed at which she gets on the court, if not, you know, the overall impact of whether she does or not. So when you're thinking about her as a potential justice, what do you think her effect would be? Are the concerns that she would, you know, nullify the ACA in one way or another, do you believe that those are legitimate?
Oh, they're more than legitimate. I mean, they're almost practically factually correct, considering everything that she's written in the past. Now, of course, she would just be one of nine justices, but I think that where do I even start with this? I mean, there was this Texas and California cases that were thought to be too radical and too extreme, even for the GOP 6 months ago. The idea that they would sink the entire Affordable Care Act during a pandemic, and lo and behold, that's the case that's now going to be more than likely passed through the Supreme Court if she gets on there. So to me, it's horrific for a bunch of reasons. We've talked about this before, but taking away people's healthcare during a pandemic, reversing the gains of states that have expanded Medicaid, right? That's going to lead to dramatic rises in people getting kicked off of insurance rolls. People don't even realize how bad that is, largely impacting lower income, minoritized populations in blue states. Sense a theme there, but the entire country, it's going to just, you know, the entire country is going to be at the whim, really, of insurance companies who across the board now will have free rein to deny care for people with pre-existing conditions. It's much cheaper for them to let you die. It's actually a lot cheaper than it is to cover a pre-existing condition, and that was a protection the ACA gave. And so the fact that we're even having this debate in the middle of this horrific pandemic, to me, I would say it's surreal, but unfortunately, it's all too real. And I think that if she gets on the court, I'm pretty certain that's going to happen.
Like, it seemed crazy before, but now it's crazy plus 200,000 dead. Like, it's that much more crazy. And that's not to say that they won't do it. They have chosen Amy Coney Barrett. I doubt that she has changed her mind much from her earlier, you know, statements about this. But if she gets on there, and if she does cast a vote, potentially the deciding vote that does kill the ACA and throws millions of Americans off their healthcare during a pandemic that, for all we know, could still be raging in a year, what do you think that American society, how will they respond to that? What long-term impact will that choice and the success of that choice have on American politics?
Well, there are two levels of this, and I mean, sadly, we could go through any number of issues, right? They're going to expand the Heller Act, so there are going to be many more guns. We could talk about that at a future thing. They're going to screw up the public education system. Any number of these things were, even a year ago, thought to be very far radical right positions, even in the mainstream GOP. And so really, I think as society starts to pick up and recognize, and really, it's a particular challenge, I have to say, to blue states, right? Because a lot of red states didn't expand Medicaid. They didn't create competitive insurance marketplaces. And so really, I think a lot of this devastation, a lot of blue states also have state level gun laws that are pretty effective. And those are probably going to get overturned if she gets on the court. And so really, this is a way of you know, trashing blue states as a way of trashing the country. And ultimately, that just doesn't work as a country. And so I think part of the issue will be, are these issues too far to the right of just the electorate, where people start to wake up and say, wait a minute? And some people seem to think that. I don't know. I've been studying red states for a long time, and I've seen people put up with this kind of stuff for a long time. So unfortunately, I think what we're seeing, there's something that they used to call the Southern strategy. That's how, like, the Nixon-Reagan people won over the South with racism. And I think we're just seeing the Southern strategy become a national strategy. And so I think it really is a challenge to liberals, Democrats, progressives. How are they going to fight back in strategic ways? Because this is not a short fight. This is a long fight. And in answer to what you said before, I think we will be in the pandemic in a year still. So I think it's going to be potentially super duper bad.
Well, in terms of, and that's certainly an understatement, but I agree. So in terms of how to fight back in that way, I really do think that the you're saying that they're losing white voters. I feel like the way that they're being lost, these voters are being courted by the right, really plays into why those voters don't seem to care about the pandemic, don't seem to mind the idea that people will be thrown off their healthcare during a pandemic. But you're the expert. So in terms of messaging, in terms of campaigning going forward, what should the Democrats do? I'm assuming the answer is not, you know, try to appeal to racists in the way that the GOP does, try to beat them at their own game. So then what is on the table? How do you win back some of those voters?
Well, I'll give you two answers to that. One is I'm part of a pretty cool project now that's under the hashtag with Biden we can, and it's run by I'm involved, Mark Ruffalo is help running it, Mondale Robinson from the Black Male Voter Project. It's kind of trying to imagine what the country should look like. In other words, what would real leadership look like at this moment? And so I would invite people to check out this hashtag with Biden we can, just to see a place where people are actually having this conversation in ways that imagine what would responsible leadership look like. The other part I think is pretty important in my many years of interviewing red state voters. It's pretty amazing. Like if you just listen to NPR, which I do all the time, you would think that all Trump supporters are, you know, crazed, pants on fire, running around with AR-15. But in fact, they've been trained for about three decades that the most important thing for their movement and their goals is the courts. Like nothing matters more than the courts. And I would meet people who were literally dying and wouldn't sign up for the ACA. And when I asked them, why is it? They said, well, I don't want this thing to get entrenched in the law of the land because I want there to be a Supreme Court judge who will overturn it or who will overturn abortion, nationalize gun rights. They, from top to bottom, they've been told the way that we are going to get power and take over this country is through the courts, and now it's happening, right? So they're euphoric, a lot of people, at the possibility of this. And the Democrats haven't done that. They really haven't trained their base about what's the importance of the appellate courts, what's the importance of the Supreme Court in relation to this. And so I think really this has to be a top-down movement to really educate people. Here's what the courts do, here are the kind of coalitions you need, and here's how you make that happen. Because we, you know, for better or worse, I feel like I've never heard anything like that on our side, as opposed to when I talk to even really just, you know, foot soldiers who are on the right, who will basically be really smart about this stuff and say, look, I care about abortion and here's what I'm willing to do to get this happen. So there's a strategy step that I think we're going to have to, we used to have it, but I think we're going to have to get that back.
I couldn't agree more. That the asymmetry between how much the Supreme Court has been prioritized, both in terms of governance, but also in terms of campaigning, is huge. And you pointed out, it's not just a difference in priority, it's that they're actually succeeding. They've been doing fantastically well. And that means that now the Democrats are going to need to gird themselves for decades of trying to right that asymmetry. So I certainly agree with you there. You know, so glad we could have you on to talk about these topics, because your writing and your research just plays into it so much. Jonathan Metzl, as always, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, anytime.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.